Last time we heard from TJ, he was speeding up Interstate 95 in Miami with his work associate, Jose, in a brand new Lamborghini.
So now I'm hitting right at 200 miles per hour.
200
yeah,
miles
right,
an
right
hour.
Right at that, yeah, right at that.
And then TJ's Lambo suddenly goes airborne.
And I don't know this because I'm driving.
You don't feel it.
Yeah, I felt that the steering wheel got light. Got very, very light.
But you're literally like airborne at this
point.
Well,
I don't know that because I'm inside the car looking at the horizon, 2-3 in the morning, you know, and I don't know that. So I tell Jose, I say, shit, we got a problem. He goes, what are you talking about? I don't feel the wheel. And he goes, what do you mean you don't feel the wheel? The next thing I know is kaboom, and we hit something hard. Now everybody around me pulls off the road, and the guy screaming to another guy, no, it's not an airplane, it's a car.
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story. Episode 12, Second Chances.
If you get too much downdraft on the back wing and I push too hard here, what happens? The nose goes up.
The nose goes up.
So when the nose goes up and a Lamborghini is basically almost sealed from the bottom, and now you're riding a curtain of air.
TJ is blowing my mind yet again with another crazy adventure. I had no idea Lamborghinis could fly, but it does happen. And sometimes it even makes the evening news.
Showing how a Lamborghini went flying through the air and landed on the roof of a South Florida home.
It's called ground effect. So I got ground effect because, I mean, I'm airborne, I'm flying, but I don't have an engine up there.
Right.
So eventually I'm going to lose speed and I'm going to come back.
You don't have wings.
No, of course.
So you went in the air for how long do you think?
I don't know. I tell you what I do know, and this is, I don't give a darn who believes it, doesn't believe it. Ground effect is a fact. You see it on race cars, they go up. You see it on power boats.
Ground effect.
Yeah, it's called ground effect. And so I go airborne. I come back down. I lose control of the car.
When you hit the ground.
When I hit the ground, I lose total control of the car. God. And when people tell you, do this, do that, that's
no,
bullshit.
Well, you're doing 200
you're there
miles
for
an hour.
You're now going on a joyride, okay?
Yeah, there's nothing
you're
you
there
can
for
do.
The ride.
Yeah.
This thing's got his own mind. You don't step on the brake, though. What you try to do is you try to turn the car into the turn with the wheels.
Right.
But the car is not responding. I'm not getting any response at all from the car. So I hit the wall with just, I glazed one of the bumpers, a rubber bumper. I didn't even put a scratch on the car, by the way. Not even a scratch. I do 2 360s on 95. Boom, boom, boom. And then I managed to drive the car off to the shoulder. Now everybody around me pulls off the road. Cars that were coming in, they pull off the side of the road and run over the median. The center had like a little wall there, divider. They jump over and the guy screaming to another guy, no, it's not an airplane, it's a car. And I'm hearing these people screaming this stuff and I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? He said, dude, man, I've been to a bunch of races. You were way up there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You were in the air, man. I saw the hole underneath of the car. You came down. You were like a plane. I'm hearing this stuff from these people. I don't know this.
Wow.
But I look at my car, and I try to move it. The car won't move. Engine turns. Everything is cool. I got two puddles of gasoline on the floor. Because what happens now, I ripped out the A-frame.
When you came down.
Yeah. And, you know, like, for example, the wheels are round, right? A wheel car is round.
Yeah.
Well, they went like a half a moon.
They crushed.
They crushed the
wow.
wheels. Crushed the wheels, it ripped the A-frame out of the car, so it punctured the gas tanks, and there's fuel all over the goddamn place, and the wheels, so I can't move this car, the car cannot, it could be dragged, but it won't roll, because I got square, flat on the bottom, and I'm not talking the tires, I'm talking about the actual rim.
The rim.
The rim, it's like a half a moon,
wow.
So the car is done. Looked good, because I'm not even a scratch on the car, but
wow.
But that was that. So,
but this is another incident of you cheating death.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would kill anyone.
Well, how about
how
this?
Did you not crash into the wall or whatever, or cars hit you?
Two things here. I don't come straight down. I glide down. I glide down. The car is right around 3,800 pounds, the Lamborghini, yeah. Right in that neighborhood, give or take. You know, so I hit hard, crush it. I came back on the rear wheels, which another thing that really would have really, you know, it would have been terminal. If the car, the nose of the car kept going up, the car would have flipped over and it would have landed on the roof.
Yeah.
And then I'd be dead.
And those are delicate. Those aren't strong, you know, they crush easy.
That's very, you see it with the speedboat, you see it with cars, they actually flip backwards.
Yeah.
And they go airborne. I don't have a roll cage in that car.
Right.
Very small compartment inside. So, you know, it would have been fatal for sure. So, yeah, from that point of view, absolutely. I cheated
death again.
I wasn't supposed to die that day.
Not your day.
And I didn't. I survived it without a scratch. I came out of there, and then the police came, right? State trooper.
But TJ has definitely been scratched in other ways. By his giant pet mountain lion, for starters. Yeah, he had a mountain lion. Named Top Cat, TC for short, and TJ took TC everywhere.
I had him in the car sometimes, caused an accident. Because people are looking at the Lamborghini, and then they look in the car, and they go, oh my God, a Lamborghini. Did I just see a lion?
You drive around with a mountain lion in the car. Lamborghini.
Yeah. And he was really afraid of all the noise, by the way. He was all over the car. Sometimes it was really a pain in the butt because he was like all over me. Stop it. You know, I'm trying to shift gears.
And so you would do like a take your mountain lion to work day.
I had a class one license. They call it a class one license, which is big cats. You got to be licensed, you know.
You got him as a little kitten.
Oh, yeah. I got him as a cub. He was 2 weeks old. He opened up his eyes with me.
We have pictures of this on cocaineair.com in the gallery.
Yeah, and
And Top Cat as a cub. And then he's giant on top of you sitting. Like, how is he not eating your head?
Well, I could show you my scars that I have on the leg from where he sunk both of his four teeth into my leg.
Why did he bit you? I'm posting a video now on my Instagram, @QueenOfTheCon, of TJ playing with his giant mountain lion, TC. Once you see this video, you'll understand why TC bit him, and you'll wonder why TC didn't just tear him apart and eat him, because TJ plays really, really rough with TC. At one point, he's forcing TC's mouth open with his bare hands to reveal TC's giant teeth. TJ literally shows no fear. So how did he bite your leg and why?
Later on, I'll show you my scars. You'll see in the video, I was always messing with him.
He just plays rough.
He's a mountain lion. At the end of the day, he's doing what comes natural to him. They bite each other in the wild. Yeah. They just got thicker skin.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant to harm me when he bit me, because he bit me and let go. He didn't bite and rip. Yeah, you're going to see me horsing around saying, let me see those big teeth, and I'm forcing his mouth open.
Oh my God.
That's on video.
On the video. Yeah,
you're going to see that.
Again, I have that video up on my Instagram, @QueenOfTheCon, and I'm putting it up on cocaineair.com as well. It kind of looks like TJ is rehearsing for a circus act as a lion tamer. And it was during a romp session like this one that TC sinks his giant teeth into TJ's leg and then lets go. Blood starts gushing out from the wound, and TJ stumbles away, shocked. And then he grabs his gun in case TC tries to bite him again.
Now I'm bleeding and I'm bleeding and I'm bleeding. So I say, shit, I'm gonna have to go to a hospital. I'll deal with this later. You know, so I put the gun down, I jump in the car, wrap thing around my leg, I'm bleeding, I got holes in my leg like that. So I jump in the car, boom, I go to the hospital, emergency. I get this thing treated. What bit you, mountain lion? Well, you know, we can't stitch it up because their teeth have a lot of germs and blah, blah. We're gonna have to give you this, like, you know, like the cat scratch fever, all that kind of crazy stuff. I'm not a doctor. So they're giving me antibiotics and all the kind of shots that they're giving me. All right, that's cool. By the time that I got out of the hospital, I had already calmed down. And then I realized one thing. He was just being who he is.
Yeah.
And I was being stupid. So I decided I'm going to hire a lion tamer. You know, so I go out, guy that did a lot of stuff for Hollywood, and I hire this guy that's trained big cats.
Again, it's a miracle you're alive. Like, he could have just eaten you alive, dude. You're like roughhousing with a mountain lion. But TJ learned a lot from the lion tamer he hired about the proper and safe way to interact with TC. And they got along great after that. Really great. TJ would bring TC to work with him to his Lamborghini dealership and keep him in an enclosure in the back office, which came in handy because one day some goons show up to threaten TJ. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of them believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. With more than 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, and it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. And their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now. Long story short, a guy named Orlando, who owed TJ $200,000, was refusing to pay him. So TJ took possession of his Porsche Gambala worth $200,000, and he planned to sell it and get his money. But all of a sudden,
a guy walks in with two guys painted on suits, arms that look like legs, right? And they stand behind the guy like this. Stands in the middle of my car dealership and goes, "Who the hell is this guy, Tito?" with a nasty voice. So I jump up and I said, "I'm Tito, what's the problem here? Why are you yelling and why are you asking for me?" And the guy goes, "I own this car. I'm here to pick up the car." I said, "You own that car?" And I say, and "Who are you?" The guy said, "My name is Rick." I said, "So who are you, Rick?" He said, "I'm Orlando's partner." I said, "You're Orlando's partner. And who are these two guys? Are these two guys here to intimidate me?" I said, "Because I don't intimidate. No, this is my driver and my assistant." So I said, "So it's your driver and you're the assistant. And you're, who are you again?" "You're Rick, right? Orlando's partner. And you say you're here to pick up this car? Well, let me ask you something, Rick. What kind of partnership is this?" "Hang on a second, Rick. I want you to meet my cat." I'm talking to him just like this. "Your cat?" "Yeah, my cat. I'm really close to my cat. I met your driver, I met your assistant. I want you to meet the rest of my family. I want you to meet my cat." So Patrick, who's my personal valet, whose father was a gentleman's gentleman in England, who I adopted him as my personal valet.
So you had a valet?
Yeah, sure. You'll meet him.
Yeah. A gentleman's gentleman.
Yeah, that's right. That's the guy that if I got to go and stand in a line, he goes and stands in the line.
My only reference for that is a Frasier episode where that was a plot point. Frasier had a valet.
Oh, yes, sir.
A gentleman's gentleman.
"Even my father's father was a gentleman's gentleman."
"That's a good one, Ferguson."
"Thank you, sir. It's one of my staples."
He's like an assistant. But
personal everything. He does whatever.
He does everything. He's like another you for you.
The only thing he doesn't do is share my women or chew my food.
Right. But he goes and gets top cat.
Anything. So I say to Patrick, "Patrick, bring me TC." "In here?" And I said, "Yeah, right in here. Bring him in here."
And so where was TC?
TC was in a cage in the back, way, way, way. It's like 5 acres, so you wouldn't even see him. So now I'm stalling the conversation, waiting for TC to come in the building. So I say to Rick, so Rick, explain to me the situation with this partnership. Are you guys like 75-25, 50-50?
You're just vamping.
Exactly, I'm just you're biding time, right? So I see TC coming in the door way over there. I said, so what are you like 50-50? And I said, because I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. If you're 50-50 partners, Orlando owes me a lot of money. That means that you owe me half. So if you brought me $100,000, I'm gonna let you take the effing four tires. Oh, and by the way, turn around, that's TC. Patrick, turn them loose. Now TC's running rampant through the dealership.
Oh my God.
These guys go like this and they just see this giant cat going at them. They peeled out, they looked like Flash. They left their shoes on the ground.
But
man.
TC had no ill intent. He was just running towards you.
Me.
But they thought he's coming.
They were
going to
get eaten up. Listen, Jonathan, they got wedged on the door.
I'm sure.
All three guys got wedged on the door.
They tried to go out together.
Yeah, it was like, save yourself.
Like a Three Stooges episode.
Yeah, whoever's back there is going to get eaten up. I'm not going to be that guy. So they're fighting to get out the door. And I'm,
but
hey,
all TC just ran over to you.
Yeah, he put his paws on me, started licking me and stuff. You know, TC, I love you too, you know. Let's go find out what happened to my buddies. So I wrap the green cord around my arm. Yeah. I don't want him to break loose. Yeah. If he breaks loose and hurts somebody, it's on me. Yeah. By the time I got out in the parking lot, they were inside the car with the windows rolled up, right? You're effing crazy. They're yelling at me from inside the car. He said something kind of nasty. This ain't going to be over. This is not over. So I'm going to break the window. I'm going to punch the glass, and I'm going to take TC and throw him inside there. That's what my intention was. Let them have fun. You know, let's see what's going to happen. I'm not afraid of these guys. I'm not worried about these guys. So as I'm going to hit the window like this, the guy goes, and they peel out. Right? So now they're gone. So not long after that, I get a phone call, Orlando. Man, you're a crazy nut, man. You're just crazy. You're a nut. He said, I just got a call from my partner. And I said, yeah, they left in a hurry. He said, yeah, you know what he said? You seek your lion to eat him. I said, seek my lion to eat him. It's TC. I wanted to introduce him to TC. What's the goddamn problem here? Oh, Orlando, I'm keeping the car. Car's mine. And that was the end of that.
TJ's life back in the 1980s is like a never-ending action-adventure movie. And I would swear he's making everything up. Only he's not.
I don't believe he's ever lied to me.
That's TJ's criminal defense attorney, Fred Schwartz, who to this day has yet to catch TJ in a lie.
Anything he told me turned out to be true. And we were able to use the fact that everybody who knew him knew he was an honest person. Might be a criminal, but he was an honest criminal, if you can accept that as a...
Absolutely, and that has been my experience as well, because so many people approach me. You know, because the podcast is kind of crazy.
Right.
And so many people approach me and tell me there's no way that all that's true. But it checks out with the court records, with news reports at the time. It checks out. I've read the indictment. Right. Everything he's saying checks out. So I've had the same experience. I've never felt he was lying to me about anything. He's an honest guy.
Anybody who meets him likes him.
Ain't that the truth?
And as I said, he's honest. He tells the truth, sometimes to his detriment. And in my experience, every time he's told me something, like you, and I've checked it out, because I have to. I can't go to a court and say something without knowing that I verified or did my best to verify it. It came out to be the truth. So I've listened to your podcast, and I hear interesting stories, and I have friends who I've forwarded your podcast to.
Ooh.
And they say, come on, this is all garbage. I say, no. Every single thing in that podcast that he said is true.
TJ had to kiss a lot of frogs until he found Fred Schwartz. Every lawyer he had hired before, like F. Lee Bailey, would essentially scam him, taking hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees while promising TJ the moon, but then not really doing anything to help TJ's case.
I learned early when I started doing criminal defense work, that if you tell the client what they want to hear, or you tell them what great things you're going to do for them. And then you don't achieve that. You've made an enemy, and some of these people you don't want as an enemy. So what I would do was to tell them, I don't know if I can accomplish what you want. It's not going to be easy. Even if it was going to be relatively easy, I would make it more difficult than it probably
make
would
it
be.
Make it sound more difficult.
Yeah, so that if I was successful, then I was a hero.
Right.
If I wasn't successful, then I predicted it, and I didn't overpromise.
By the time TJ found Fred Schwartz, things were bad.
If he went to trial and was convicted, he would have gone to jail for the rest of his life. And
that guilty plea was crucial.
Well, you couldn't just take a guilty plea because the government didn't like him. One of the agents who was working on his case had gone to high school with him.
Oh.
And really didn't like him because Tito was a very popular kid in high school, drove a Corvette, karate master, etc. And this guy was going to put Tito in jail for as long as he could. So if you just took a plea of guilty, maybe he wouldn't get life. He might have gotten 50 years. So we had to make a deal whereby Tito not only pled guilty, but pled guilty with the judge wanting to let him out as soon as he could.
So Fred Schwartz works out a deal with prosecutors whereby TJ agrees to turn over all his money, all his planes and boats, all his real estate, his Lamborghini dealership, his cell phone company, his housing development, and TJ agrees to teach the feds how he was able to smuggle all that cocaine under their noses for years without getting caught. And TJ avoids a decades-long prison sentence because Fred Schwartz knows exactly what prosecutors want from TJ. I mean, he used to be one of them.
I started out as an assistant district attorney, first in Brooklyn and then in Queens. I specialized in organized crime cases. I left the Queens DA's office in 1978. I was hired by the organized crime section of the U.S. Justice Department. I was first an attorney, then deputy chief, then acting chief of the Federal Organized Crime Strike Force.
And how did you switch over to becoming a criminal defense attorney?
Well, it's all because of women. I got divorced.
Ah.
And I had to support myself and my own house and also my wife and ex-wife and kids. And at that time, as a relatively high-level federal prosecutor, I was making all of $53,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
And I just couldn't afford what I was doing. So I like to tell people I traded my white hat for a gray one. And I started representing people who were charged with criminal activities. Of course, all my clients were innocent except Mr. Dominguez here.
Pled guilty.
He did.
Yeah. Being a criminal defense attorney is infinitely more profitable than being a prosecutor.
Oh, yeah. The first year I went into private practice, I was making four times what I made as a federal prosecutor.
Wow.
White-collar criminals, organized crime-related criminals, importers of pharmaceutical and herbal products from South America, all tend to have money to spend on attorneys.
Yep, TJ had a lot of money, all right, and he lived a lavish lifestyle, which made it easier to target him once law enforcement had him in their sights.
So we would do surveillances of him, the businesses, other players in his organization, set up on houses that we thought maybe were going to be, you know, used as drop houses or, you know, stash houses and stuff like that.
That's Steven Rubino. He's a private investigator now with his own investigation and security company called Finest Consultants. But back in the crazy cocaine days of the 1980s...
I was a detective with the Broward Sheriff's Office. I worked in the Organized Crime Division in the General Narcotics Unit.
And Steven Rubino's job for months back in 1987 and 1988 was keeping tabs on TJ.
So I didn't actually meet him face to face, but obviously he was a target of federal agencies and my agency, which was the Broward Sheriff's Office.
So were you one of the guys in one of these tinted window cars following TJ, like taking pictures, taking video?
Yes, I was involved in a few of those, but less on him than on some of his other people or stash houses or the business to see who comes and goes, you know, things like that. And, you know, we would use all different kinds of vehicles, vans, work vans, RVs even sometimes, you know, and regular cars. And depending on who it was or when it was, you know, we might have 2 to 4 or 5 tail vehicles, you know, following somebody. Because in urban areas, you know, it's not like you see on TV. To do a surveillance is pretty tricky. Sometimes even we have a plane in the air. So the more, basically, the merrier when it comes to surveillance.
And I imagine if TJ's driving around in his red Lamborghini, it's that much easier to keep him in your sights when you're tailing him.
Of course, yes. It's not like these guys were very discreet. They tend to flaunt their wealth. So it makes it a little easier for us, yeah. In that instance, you know, he's not driving a Toyota Celica, you know, which there's thousands of them, you know, running around, which makes it harder to do a surveillance. But, you know, yeah, they're a bit flamboyant.
You kept up with the Lamborghini?
Yeah, there was several of us. So yeah, you know, I remember seeing him at the business because we would sit on the business, like I told you earlier, to see who came and went, and he obviously would come and go.
And when you're watching him at this Lamborghini dealership, where are you situated?
There's another car dealership across the street at the time. So we would hide in there, and then there's other businesses around there that we could blend into.
And what are you doing? Are you like taking pictures or just looking, observing?
There are guys that are taking pictures, particularly of people coming and going, video even.
Wow.
Get pictures of their vehicles and their tags so we can identify them, that kind of stuff, yeah.
And then in April of 1988, when TJ was charged and arrested for drug smuggling, his family was devastated. They had no idea, especially his mother.
When my mom walked into prison, she looked at me and she said, "Son, I'm only going to ask you one thing." And I didn't even know how to do eye contact with my mom at that time. And she said, "Tell me what they're saying about you is not true." You know, and I'll never forget those words. You know, "Tell me what they're saying about you is not true." You know, I heard them. And for that, it's a cross I got to live with.
Since getting out of prison, TJ's turned over a new leaf. He gives talks now at schools and colleges, explaining to kids why all that glitters is not gold, and how a couple of bad decisions when you're young can lead to prison and a lifetime of regret.
I actually spoke at the University of Miami to the auditorium, probably 400 people there, our future lawyers, our future judges, future FBI agents, criminology class. And it was funny because they had a judge, they had a prosecutor, they had an agent. I guess you got to bring in your token criminal. That would be me. I didn't really want to be going in there like that, but I went in there like that. So they were asking me some tough questions. I even said to a couple of the guys, I was up there for over an hour, and I say, "Hey, guys, are we trying to re-indict me here?"
Were they attacking you?
No, they were not attacking me. They were asking me tough questions. And they were asking me also questions that had to do with emotions. And how do you feel about the things that you did to society? And do you have any remorse? And how did you get away with this? And oh, I answered every one of them, you know? And I remember this, the bell rung and nobody was moving. And the professor of the class said, "You guys are gonna be late for the class." And they came up, they lined up to shake my hand. And then later on, the professor of the class says to me, I asked the class afterwards who they found more interesting and who they connected more with, the judge, the agent, the prosecutor. Unanimously, everybody said, "Tito Dominguez." But the one thing that I will definitely make time for is to go to schools, to speak to children, to tell them, "Okay, listen, the movies are the movies, and there's a lot of truth in the movies. And yeah, it was great swinging off chandeliers, being a pirate of the Caribbean, and all this and all of that, but it's not all that it's cracked up to be. The price that you pay, the people that you hurt along the way, and I'm not talking about the people that are doing drugs, okay? That's their choice. So that doesn't concern me. I'm sorry to say that, but it's the truth. I'm talking about your loved ones, the people that you disappoint, the people that brought you into this world, the mother that made your bed and fed you, and now you disappoint her. And that is no price. You just, I can't equate that to any, the pain that you feel. You know, solitary was bad. The hardest thing I've ever done in my life was face my own mother when she looked at me and she said, tell me what they're saying about you is not true. You know, there's just more to freedom. And it all has to do with the love that you have for your family. And you don't want to cause them harm or embarrassment. So it goes beyond losing your freedom. It's a cross that you have to bear. And if I could sit there and share some of these experiences with children and letting them know that, listen, guys, if you put the same effort that you're going to put into selling in a street corner cocaine or marijuana, if you put the same effort into going out and getting yourself a $100 car, cleaning the wheels, polishing the glass, and putting a for sale sign and put $50 more than what you bought it for, put the car on a street corner that's got a lot of traffic, put a phone number on there, you'll sell it. Somebody will buy it. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, you know, and these are realistic goals. And then reinvest and reinvest and stick to your plan. When everything else fails, stick to the plan. You'll outwear everybody, or they'll just get so goddamn tired of you that they'll buy it.
TJ is deep in that process now, and for every 3 steps he takes forward, because of his past, he gets pushed back a step.
And I've sat in front of a lot of wealthy people, righteous people, people that you say, wow, you know so-and-so? Yeah, I do know so-and-so. But this so-and-so brings me to somebody else who's also very wealthy, a billionaire to be more precise. And that billionaire brings me in front of somebody else, right? And this is one comment that kind of blew me away. The guy said to me, wow, I would love to do this deal with you, but I'm really afraid of you. And I said, what would you be afraid of me, man? I'm probably the best partner you'll ever have because I'm not gonna do anything wrong. I'm not gonna break the law, you know? And the guy goes, yeah, no, I get that. He says, and there's no doubt in my mind that you know how to make money because a lot of people are in the drug business and nobody made the money that you made. But if you and I have a difference, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna be afraid that you would maybe not see things my way. And if you get pissed off at me, I'd be worried about that. So I said, well, that's a fair view. And, you know, one that I've got no answer for other than if we have a difference of opinion, I'd like to think that we could settle it civilly. But that entered into the factor. Again, the past is always there. You know, it's something that it's a cross I have to live with. And I'd like to eventually get to a point in my life where I could take that cross and hold it up high and be proud of that cross and say, we live in America. The greatest country in the world.
Tears fill TJ's eyes as he's talking.
We're all sons of immigrants, unless you're a native Indian. So what does that make us? A great country of second chances. So living in a country of second chances, I like my second chance. That's all I could say. Don't judge me by what I did before. I'm a better person today. Why? Because I bled and I know what it's like to bleed. So how are you going to judge me? Judge me by the fact that I'm building myself up from nothing like the phoenix. I don't know how else to say.
Getting to know TJ Dominguez over the past 3 years has been a profound experience for me. His work ethic and determination are an inspiration. His charisma and his passion for life is infectious. TJ is living proof that it doesn't matter how long or how far you've gone the wrong way in life and done the wrong thing, every passing moment is another chance to turn it all around. And if at first you don't succeed, Try again, especially on the marriage front. Because you were married twice.
3 or 4 times.
You were married 3 or 4 times?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is it 3 or is it 4?
One marriage didn't count because it didn't get filed. They didn't process the paper. So that marriage was like nullified. It didn't really work.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's, but yeah, that's I've been married
three or four times.
Right.
Yeah.
The or four is that one.
Yeah, and I'll get married again. And you know, when I get the righteous people out there telling me, oh, hell, I've been married 40 years. Wow, 40 years, wonderful. I've been married 40 years too. Oh, you've been married 40 years? I say, yeah, with about four different wives.
To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. Sound design and editing for this episode was done by Mike Smith. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media, so subscribe and keep an ear out.